Sure good to be with you tonight. I'd like tonight for us just to look at a passage from the book of 3 John. Well, not just look at a passage, but look at the whole text of 3 John. That's where we're headed tonight. And just kind of an expository or textual kind of lesson this evening that I hope that we can all find to be helpful in some way. You might wonder sometime, you know, just what were the people like in the church of the first century? Well, obviously, we read through the book of Acts and the epistles. We get some good inclination there about what the church was like, the people. You read the book of 3 John, you get some more insight. I mean, we have kind of here a description of three men described in just some very good detail. It's an interesting letter in that it's a private letter. It's a letter written by the Apostle John, and he's writing to a Christian named Gaius. And I take it here that he is giving Gaius some instruction and encouragement about some things he's seeing, some things he's having to deal with. But in the letter, we find the portraits here of three men, three different men. And it gives us a glimpse in many ways of first century life in the local church, we might say. And so as we examine the letter, we can learn that in some ways, there's not a lot of difference between people back then and people in the Lord's church today. Sometimes there are issues, and those issues come from people who are in the church. And sometimes we need to think about how to deal with those things. And it reminds us that though this letter was written 1900 years ago, it's very relevant. And so we focus here for a few minutes just on some things the Apostle John wrote a long time ago. We're looking here first at the introduction to the letter of the Apostle John to his beloved Gaius. We begin here, and we're going to read the first four verses just to kind of get ourselves into the story. The elder, to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. For I rejoiced greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, as you do walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. An interesting introduction, I think. And just by looking at this, we already know some important things about this man named Gaius. It's interesting to me that the name Gaius is used about five times in the New Testament. I don't know that it's always about this same man. In fact, I suspect it's not. Though in perhaps another letter, it is mentioning the same one. It's kind of a popular name at the time. And so whether he is one of those mentioned by Luke or Paul, well, I don't really know that. But what we do know in this letter is that the Apostle John is writing to someone that he knows. Perhaps even someone that was a convert of John's by some of the things that he says here. Evidently a dear friend of John. And he identifies for us some things about Gaius that we might want to know. Some things about his hospitality even. And we see John's prayer for Gaius. And this is interesting too. I mean, when you just think about, well, what would you pray for your friend? Well, even some things we've prayed for tonight collectively. You see, notice the prayer of John for Gaius. He prayed that Gaius would prosper. Well, that's kind of an interesting thought, that he would prosper. Well, prosper how? Materially? Well, we pray for such things. We pray that God would watch us and protect us, provide us the things we need day by day. I don't see any problem with that. It could turn to a materialistic want and, well, no, wait a minute, that's another issue. We could have some problems there. But the idea here is that he's praying that Gaius would have some things that he needs. But he prayed that Gaius would prosper physically. I believe there's been some prayers on my behalf physically today. Thank you. Continue those, please. We need those prayers, right? But as well, he prayed for him spiritually. Did you catch that part? There were some concerns, you know, there's prayers for him here spiritually. Of course, it's good to pray for our physical condition. But what if our physical condition was the same as our spiritual condition? what kind of shape would we be in physically? Now, did you catch the connection here? In verse 2, "Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health just as your soul prospers." Well, that's kind of an interesting turn on that. Think about what he's saying. Gaius, I wish and I pray that you would prosper in all things as much as your soul is prospering. Well, as we learn more about Gaius, we find that it would seem his soul is prospering well, that spiritually he was doing well. But what if the prayer of our brethren for us was that, "Well, I pray that you will prosper physically just as much as you are prospering spiritually"? How well would we be doing physically then? Kind of an interesting turn, isn't it? You have to think about that. You see, sometimes we're so concerned about the physical things of life that it becomes our focus, sometimes our only focus, really. And if we were, in fact, to prosper physically just as much as we are prospering spiritually, how well would we be prospering on the physical side? Interesting thought. Now for Gaius, and of course the apostle understood this, Gaius was one who was prospering well spiritually. That is, he was spiritually sound. He was doing the things he needed to do. His faith was good. His faith was strong. He was busy about the work that he needed to be doing. And so he could say such a thing as this, and it wasn't meant to be a slight in any way. In fact, I take it to be a compliment, really, because Gaius was doing well on the spiritual side of things. How would you gauge your spiritual condition? I mean, from a physical standpoint, we're likely to do that. I mean, people say, "Well, how are you doing?" Well, today I'm kind of under par. I'm not up to speed. You know, it's like you could say, some people, "How are you doing?" "Well, I'm doing great. I'm doing perfect." You know, you have nothing wrong. Well, that's great. Or, "How are you doing?" "Well, I could use a little improvement here. I'm not feeling as well as I usually do." Or maybe it's, "Hey, how are you doing?" It's like, "I've got some real problems. I've been to the doctor and he says, I've got to change some things in my life. I've got some physical problems." You see how it kind of keeps going down. How would you gauge yourself spiritually? Or maybe we should rephrase that. How would the Lord gauge your spiritual condition? What would he say about that? You see, it puts some things in perspective here when we think about this. Now, on the physical side, sometimes we need a little more exercise. Sometimes we have to change our diet. We have to do some things in our life to improve our physical condition. We all understand that. Most of us try to pay attention to those things. What about our spiritual side? What about our spiritual needs? Are we needing a little exercise there? Is there a need of a change in diet, perhaps, so that we can grow, so that we can mature, so that we can improve in spiritual health? That's something for us to think about. It's something that needs to be on our mind. But now, John's view of Gaius here is that Gaius is doing the right things, that his faith is intact, that Gaius has come to understand truth and has taken hold of that and is living that in his life. And John loved Gaius. We read on a little bit further here. Even just consider what we read here. Look at verse 3 and 4 again. There's a couple of points I want to bring out. "For I rejoiced greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you. As you do walk in the truth, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth." Gaius had a reputation, and we all do. But Gaius had a good reputation. This gives John every reason to love Gaius because of his reputation, because of the man that he was. And this gives John reason to rejoice because, as the text says, Gaius walked in truth. This was the bond between the apostle and Gaius, was that Gaius walked in truth. That's what held that relationship. It gave John great joy to come to see and to understand the faithfulness of Gaius. You know, any who has been involved in teaching or preaching and has had some slight influence on somebody's change of life, accepting the gospel, coming to understand truth and making a change of life, you know, that forms a special bond with that person. And I kind of think that was what John was saying here. It pleased him. It encouraged him. It lifted up the apostle. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. It kind of gives me the impression that perhaps Gaius was a convert of the apostle John. And then a little bit further we read at verse 5. He goes on to say, "Beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you do well, because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We ought to receive such, that we may become fellow workers for the truth." A little more insight here to Gaius. He was hospitable to all. This was a part of his reputation again. And we should love. It should be in us as the people of God. We should love to help others. It's not just a collective responsibility. Sometimes it is. But here's something that Gaius was doing. He was concerned about the welfare of others, for both brethren and for strangers. Did you see that? And this became his reputation, and it's become known even to the church that his love for doing these things, for doing what right, has become known to the church, and the church has even given testimony of these things. It says a lot about the man named Gaius. And he goes on to say that the impression that I'm understanding or getting from this right here was that Gaius was one who was helping those who were going out teaching the gospel. It was his support even for gospel preachers, sending them forth in his name's sake. Again, this wasn't a collective responsibility. Sometimes it is. But here we're talking about the responsibility that Gaius had accepted. He had some means to do these things and had accepted that responsibility. And the apostle, it seems, was praising him for these things. What are some of the lessons learned from Gaius? Well, Gaius was excelling at what he did. And he excelled at what he did in part because he worked at it. The only way you can excel at anything is you have to do something. And that's what Gaius was doing. I mean, his faith was intact. His faith came from an understanding of the truth. And he got up and did something with that faith. And it was seen and it was known by others. We can make the point as well that reputation matters. And the reputation of Gaius was one that stood out in a very good way, so much so that others would remark and make testimony, give testimony about the things that Gaius was doing. Lessons learned, we could say as well, that we must walk in truth. Well, I know in some ways that seems like a given to those who would be Christians. But as this lesson goes on, we see that all do not have the reputation of doing what's right or walking in truth. But Gaius did. It brought joy to John that his children would walk in truth. What a delight it was to the Apostle John to see Gaius, and hospitality. What would John say about us? Sometimes this becomes a little bit of a ticklish issue to some, the idea of hospitality. And I know the word hospitality is not used here, but the idea certainly implied that he was looking how he could help and care for others who may have some particular need, even those who are strangers, and of course to his brethren. Hospitality is something that, as people of God, needs to just be a part of who we are. That we are kind, we are caring, we are wanting and willing to help those who have appeared to us to have some need. And that was the reputation of Gaius. All of these are descriptions of the character of the man and the reputation of the man. And it introduces us then to the idea of why the Apostle John was so fond of him and why he is taking the time to write to Gaius, because there were some other issues going on. There were some others who maybe would have some influence on Gaius. And so the apostle is trying to hold him up and say, Gaius, look, I've heard about the things that you are doing. You have a good reputation. You are standing on faith. You are acting in truth. You're doing things that are right. Though the church where Gaius was a member, it appears, had some issues and had a problem. And that takes us to the next character in the text. At verse 9, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. Beloved, do not follow what is evil, but what is good. He who does good is of God, but he who does evil has not seen God. Obviously, we're talking about someone very different than Gaius here. You know, I've perhaps mentioned before contrast. I like to emphasize contrasts, because it stands out in my mind sometimes. Contrast do. It helps me to see some things. And if you want to talk about contrast, you have them right here. You look at Gaius on one side and Diotrephes on the other. Boy, you can't get more of a contrast, you know, than white and black and day and night. This is a contrast in character in every way. Diotrephes was not a pretty person. And I'm not referring at all to what he looks like, because I don't know what he looked like. I'm talking about in character. He was not a pretty person. He was so opposite of Gaius, who was one who was showing hospitality, one who was supporting preachers, one who was walking in truth, one who was working with his brethren. Diotrephes was completely opposite of all of that. Diotrephes was a self-promoter. He strove to be first in things. He wanted to be seen. He wanted to be heard. He wanted to be, well, in control. He wanted respect, but I've not seen anything in the text that would indicate that he did something to be respected. When we consider Gaius, there was testimony by the brethren concerning the good things that Gaius was doing. But the testimony about Diotrephes is completely different than that. It's not a good testimony at all. His reputation has become known as one who has caused some problems in the church, one who is trying to take control, one who wants to be on top of everything, one who wants to be in charge. I mean, the picture here is just not good at all. He was a self-promoter. He was rebellious. He was disobedient. He refused to receive the authority of the apostles, even, as the text would say. Think about the seriousness of this. I mean, it's no different than today. If we refuse the testimony of the apostles, we have refused God. We have refused the authority of God. And it's hard for me to understand. I mean, here was a man, Diotrephes, who was actually living in the day of the apostles yet, and seems to know of the apostle John, and he is still just rejecting him, rejecting what he had to say, which is to reject the will of God, even. You know, there are so many even today who say they know God. Have you heard some who just kind of like to use the phrase, well, I know my Jesus, or I know my Lord, I know my God. And yet when you see their life and you see the way they live, you can only conclude they may know God, but not Jehovah God. They know a God, but they're not following in any way the will and the testimony of God. There's a great difference there. Diotrephes was slanderous. He spoke nonsense, which is kind of the idea of slander. He spoke against John with malicious words here, as the apostle said. Hateful, spiteful, mean is the way he would speak of the apostle. And vindictive. He would not receive certain brethren and cast other brethren out. He was the man in charge. It was though he was the one who could make judgment on the church. At least in his own mind, that was the way it should be. Do it my way or else. It seems from time to time, every church is plagued with someone who thinks very well of their own judgment and will not consider the judgment of others and wants to be in charge. What a dangerous position to try to put oneself in. And what an unscriptural position to put oneself in. I'm not saying that judgment cannot be made or does not have to be made. In fact, I would tell you there are times judgments must be made. But for one man to stand out in such a way to think that he is the one in charge and that he can rule or control the church is a dangerous situation. I mean, did he think this was his church? It's like we say sometimes, who died and made you boss? But that was the way he was. Vindictive. And the man who was going to be in charge. And I can only imagine that if you spoke out against Diotrephes, you'd be the next one who would be kicked out. That was his reputation. That's what he was known for. He was disagreeable. I mean, to put people out of the church who wanted to show hospitality, isn't that what the apostle just approved Gaius for? I mean, you can think even, most of us can think of churches that we have known who have been stifled by someone with this kind of an attitude, just disagreeable. It's amazing sometimes that a church that even on a whole can be very friendly can sometimes have one person that's disagreeable and difficult and unfriendly, and it can damage the reputation of the whole church. If you want to talk about judgments being made, sometimes in cases such as that, there are judgments that needs to be made. But it's not the one who's being disagreeable that needs to be making the judgment. There may be others who need to be making a judgment in such cases. What an ugly person, Diotrephes. In every way, in character. And it should serve as a warning. His character should serve as a warning. Because as the text would say, he who does evil has not seen God. Think about that. Man, that's a powerful passage. Those few words. He who does evil has not seen God. When we think about who is of God and who is not, sometimes by looking at the character of men, we can get some inclination. I mean, we can see those who in character look and act as God would want his people to act. And then we can very well see those who act completely different than the character God would want us to have. Lessons learned. Christians are not always what they should be. I wish it were not true. But most of us have learned over time that it is true, that sometimes there are Christians who are not what they should be. And at some point in our life, as we serve the Lord as a child of God, we may have to serve in face of opposition, even from brethren, those who should know better, those who should know how to act appropriately. Sometimes we will have to serve in spite of them, but we can't let that affect our work. I think that was what, in part, what the Apostle John was trying to say to Gaius. Gaius, you're doing some things here that are right. Your attitude is what it needs to be. You're helping those even who are in need, and you're helping support the gospel, and you have good testimony among the brethren. Don't be pulled down by a man like Diotrephes. We have to think about that sometimes. Then you have to wonder a little bit how a Diotrephes can have influence in the church. I mean, how does that happen? I mean, you would think, of course, we're reading this in hindsight, and let's be kind with that, because there's a part of me that would say to this church, what are you doing? How did you allow this to happen? But I don't imagine it just happened overnight. Sometimes things kind of come about over a period of time, and someone becomes more and more powerful in their own minds, and, and has more and more influence, even for evil, over time. And all of a sudden, here's what you have. How did that happen? Well, for that to happen, there were some who allowed Diotrephes to dominate. There were those who were letting that go on that way. There were some who did not take a stand for truth. There were some who did not stand up to Diotrephes and say, you're out of line. You're out of place. Your character is all wrong. Your motivation is wrong. Your attitude is wrong. So there were some who allowed this to happen, who didn't stand up when they needed to. And there were some who would not perhaps support those who took a stand for truth. It is not an easy feeling when you take a stand for what is right and what's true, and you have to oppose somebody, knowing that there are many who feel the same way that you do, but once you stand up, you stand all alone. It's not a good feeling. And you wonder, did that even happen? Could it have been Gaius even? Well, we don't know. We don't know. But sometimes a climate of complacency will destroy a church. And it will. One person with a bad attitude can sour the spirit of the whole church. Brethren, you can't let that happen. We just can't let that happen. One person with a bad attitude can destroy the reputation of the church. Though there can be many who are trying to do what's right, there can be one who is living in a way that is so contrary to the will of God that the reputation of the church becomes known because of that one person. You just can't let that go on. You can't let that happen. You know, people will see what we do. Character matters. There was some interesting debate several years ago on the national scene, political scene, when we had a national leader who had done some foolish things, some ungodly things. And there was some debate among the political circles about, well, if you have a man who's doing the right thing, if his personal life is a mess over here, it doesn't matter if he's accomplishing good things for the, you know, public agenda or whatever. They're basically saying character does not matter. That was several years ago, and it was just interesting debate to me. And I thought, really? We're actually saying that character doesn't matter? Throughout Scripture, we find time and time again where character matters. Character means everything to God. Character is what it is that makes us stand before God right. It's where He makes judgment of us. And to think for a moment that character doesn't matter, I'm not sure how we could ever come to that conclusion. A good character is that which comes from deep within. It's when our heart says we want to do what's right, whatever the circumstance may be. Someone said this, you maybe have heard this, is interesting to me. What is good character? Well, good character is doing what is right even when nobody else is watching you. I think that's right. Even if nobody else knows we're doing the right thing, no one's going to pat us on the back. Well, of course, we're going to do what's right anyway. Because it's right. And because it matters to God. And that's all that really counts. The need of thinking less of self and more of others is a lesson learned here too. We learn that from Diotrephes in the opposite. He obviously thought more of self and didn't think well of others. If we have to always be in control, we better look out. You know, we better examine our motivation. If we think we're always right and we have to be in control of all things, we better be careful. And we better just double check our motivation. I've said sometimes preachers have to be especially careful. Because sometimes there are expectations people have of preachers that are not realistic. Preachers don't have all the answers. Preachers aren't always right. Preachers sometimes find themselves in a position where people expect them to make all the decisions that are important in a church. Oh no, we ought not do that. we have to be careful. We need to think less of self and more of others. We have to always accept and obey the doctrine that comes from our Lord through the apostles and inspired writers. It's easy, and it is the norm of the world to be hateful and spiteful and mean, just like the Atrophies was. But that's not who we are. And so we can't be like that. There's one other man mentioned here in 3 John, Demetrius. There's not much said about Demetrius, really just one verse primarily that talks about Demetrius. We actually back up to verse 11 and we read here again. Beloved, do not follow what is evil, but what is good. He who does good is of God, but he who does evil has not seen God. Demetrius has a good reputation from all, and from the truth itself. And we also bear witness, and you know that our testimony is true. A contrast again. I mean, we've gone from a Gaius to a Diotrephes to a Demetrius, who again is so very opposite from the evil that has been described to us here. Demetrius, a man of good character. And the differences in character here show just complete opposites. One working for good and one working for evil. Pretty clear when you read through the text. Now, keep in mind here that this is a letter. It's a personal letter written to Gaius. John encourages Gaius to imitate what is good. For he who does good is of God, verse 11 says right there. I mean, pretty simple statement. It's not hard to understand. One we need to really just take to heart here. You know, he who does good is of God. You think about Diotrephes and all the evil things that he was doing. Even if he was a leader, so to speak, in the church, he was still evil. He was not of God. Just because one calls themselves a leader, just because one calls themselves a Christian, does not qualify him as a Christian or a child of God in the eyes or view of God. He who does good is of God, but he who does evil is not seen of God. Demetrius, though, appears to be offered as a pattern for Gaius. Remember, it was to Gaius the letter was written to. There were two patterns given to Gaius. Here's one of Diotrephes that was so bad. Don't be like this. And then here's Demetrius. Look at the good character of this man. He had a good report from all the brethren. That's a powerful statement. To think that all the brethren would say what is good and positive of this man. Powerful statement. The pattern for his life, it was the mandates of God's word. And his life showed clear evidence of the truth. It was just so evident in his life. Even John and the apostles could bear witness. Think of the power of that. That the apostle John, the other apostles, could give testimony that Demetrius, he is a good man. Several years ago, there was an older preacher. And somehow we got talking about this, and I don't remember even how. About just the term, well, he's a good man. You know, which we might use in a light way sometime. And since my discussion long ago on that, I've been a little more careful about if I say, if you were to hear me say, you know, I believe so-and-so is a good man, there's some weight behind that. Demetrius, he was a good man. And there was good testimony, godly testimony, that could be made and given to qualify the fact that he was a good man. That's the way I think the term really can be used, in that way. Not much is said about Demetrius, but what is said is powerful. And once more, there are some lessons learned. That there are faithful brethren that we can be influenced by. We need to be careful not to be influenced by those whose faith is not all it should be. We need to be careful not to be influenced by those who are more aligned with evil than good. We need to be careful not to be influenced by those whose character is not all it should be. And we should be looking for those whose character is stellar, whose character is in line with truth, whose heart is with God. It's with those we want to be influenced. We want to imitate what is good. Or in verse 11, beloved, do not follow what is evil, but what is good. That's what we want to do. The Apostle Paul said it this way in Romans chapter 12, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Romans 12 and verse 1. It's always an easy statement to make when you read that, and harder to do. But the power behind the statement is so very real. We need to be the people who are ready and prepared and able to overcome evil with good. Or as the Apostle Paul said another time, imitate me as I imitate Christ. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1. John says to imitate what is good for two reasons. Those who do good are of God, and those who do evil do not know God. That's enough said on that. That's the reason. We should imitate good for those reasons. To do, those who do good know God. And those who do not, or those who do evil, do not know God. That's a fearful position to be in. To be looked at by God and not recognized as one of his own. We need to be honest with ourselves. We really do. We need to make some evaluation of ourselves. We think about just where is our heart and how does that control our character and what is our character and what is our reputation and what do others see in us? What is the influence we have in the local church? Are we leading? Are we helping for what is good or for what is evil? Are we trying to run things ourselves? Are we trying to make unrighteous judgments? I mean, you think of all the things that we've seen in this short letter, all the examples, good and bad. Where do we line up? And if the apostle were praying for us today, and he would say, and I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers, how well would we do physically if we prospered physically just as our soul is prospering? That's a powerful point, isn't it? It's from the Apostle John. Short letter. Good stuff, though, isn't it? Helps us get some things in perspective. You know, we get the story here of three men. Three men who teach us a lot about good and evil. And I know that we want to be the ones that follow what is good.